Carcinogenesis, written by Rexheim and read by Wilfriede 0815. Fandom, The Locked Tomb. Characters, Catherea I, John Gaius. Rating, mature. Archive warning, graphic depictions of violence. From the additional tags, Alternate Universe Canon Divergence. Character study, Canon Disabled Character, Cancer, Body Horror, Emotional Manipulation. What if you hated God and he was like, why don't you vivisect me and then you'll feel better? Summary. John intercepts Catherea before she gets to Canaan House. God finds you on your knees in the shuttle, stroking the dead girl's hair. She's so beautiful. You made sure she didn't suffer. You drained the oxygen from her blood and held her down and whispered, shh, 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 until you felt her soul wrestle itself from its fragile housing. She fought, in the end. The whole thing was a bit more violent than you were planning, and you couldn't stop her ghost from running free. Not that you should have expected anything else, though. Not really. The 7,000 as a whole always did love to die, but the signs have always been different. And you cannot help but be proud of the dead girl who lies at your feet. There's blood on the floor, spilling out from the chest of the cavalier, and it's staining the edge of her dress. God always did have the most terrible of timing. You feel his approach. He has always been just as much of a void as any other lictor, but the air chills as he crawls out of the river to stand next to you, silent as a grave, and you do not have to turn to know he's there. Shit, he says, after a beat. You do not reply. You have one hand on the girl's chest, the other on her temple. You are an artist and have never liked being rushed. Truth, energetic preservation must be done correctly, or it's not worth doing at all. You don't really care about the cavalier, but her, you can grant her this. God makes another sound, low in the back of his throat. You don't have to look over to know that he's running his hands down his face. Kith, he starts, but the rest of his sentence seems to get lost somewhere in his throat. You say nothing. You will not be rushed. You are almost done, and God has been alive for 10,000 years. He can wait another minute to die. You seal her veins with energy. You fix her heart. You stop rigor mortis in its tracks, make sure her muscles stay pliable, make sure the tendons remember how to move within their delicate sheaths of fascia. There are bruises all over her skin from where she first fell, from where the chair pressed into her back, from where her own nails had dug into her palm, a too familiar tick of anxiety. More than that, her marrow is almost empty. Cells destroyed by their own kin. It must have been painful. You know it was painful. Her legs are dotted with petechiae, the delicate capillaries under her skin split open 1,000 times over. What little blood she has left has already started to settle, pulled downward by the shuttle's artificial gravity, so you nudge it back until she's evenly circulated. You make sure to keep the bruises. You inflate her lungs, just because you can. You can feel the tumors there, scattered throughout the tissue like stars in space. Most of them are too small to see, but she has a few that bulge out into the pleural cavity, and you make sure to preserve them too. She has a knot of tissue in her trachea. It hadn't blocked off the airway yet, but it's cutting into her esophagus. She probably hadn't eaten by mouth in weeks. It's better that she died like this. Her gallant fool of a cavalier, you could see it in him when he walked right into your blade. He was perfect, the very best your house could offer, filled with 10,000 years of lies and propaganda to die on his own sword for her so that she could become like you. Would she have done it? If a cavalier had thrown himself on the sword, would she have had the same will to live that drove you to eat your beloved soul? Probably. Even over 10,000 years, humanity cannot change that much. When you swallow, you can feel the lump in your own throat move. Your back aches. Your spine has fractured again, the tumors there expressing displeasure with your hunched posture, swelled by the rush of necromancy used to preserve the poor dead girl. Your bones heal instantly. Loveday takes care of you like that, but the lump in your throat swells with the thanatogenic push. It's not quite bad enough to cut off your oxygen and trigger the lictoral reflex, so you leave it be. The girl is perfect. She looks like she's sleeping, and it hits you with a pang you do not allow yourself to fully process to know that, like you, she would have much preferred to be alive and choking. You take one cursory glance at the cavalier and inject him with a rush of thanergy to stave off the worst of decomposition, though with none of your ordinary care. The tumor in your throat swells and bursts with the effort, before being eaten by your own cells, and it hurts, but you are quite used to pain now. You'll put him together later. Next to you, Gord coughs, a bit less discreetly than before. You take one last look at your work, and it is good, before you turn and stand. Before you is Gord, in none of his usual postures. He looks tired, the edges of his clothes tinged with river water. Why? He asks, and his voice does not betray any one hint of humanity. You hate him for this. You are angry. You have always been angry, and you pushed it down for your brothers and sisters and for his empire and for him. It's over, you hear yourself say. Your hands do not shake with what they are about to do, but you can't say you've prepared anything to say. You thought. He always said he could never return. You thought you would have to burn through at least the fifth before he deigned to cross the threshold into Dominica's halo. You expected him to come, eventually, but you did not expect him to intercept you before you had even returned to the first. You thought you had more time. You had packed your writing materials. He sees something in you. Those thonic eyes meet yours and something softens. I'm sorry, he says, and then he's John again, the man you have loved for 10,000 years. His eyes are like great pools of sadness, and as much as you wish you could look anywhere else, you cannot help but hold his gaze. Whatever I've done, whatever you think I may have done, I'm sorry. I never wanted this. Your hips pop as you shift your weight from foot to foot. You can't stand for too long without them aching, and it's a familiar pain that coils down your legs and at the base of your spine. John isn't close enough to touch yet, and the longer this debate drags on, the more your hands shake. You hate him for his inhumanity. You hate him for his humanity, the way he has always been able to sway you with a look. You dig your fingernails into your palms, and it grounds you even as he drops to his knees before you and presses his face into your thigh. He's crying. You always hate to see him cry. You never wanted this? You ask, rolling the words around in your mouth. You're fumbling. Loveday would scold you for your hesitation. She would tell you to cut the bullshit and take out his ribs. But she always hated him, and you never believed her when it mattered. You know John is trapping you, has trapped you. You know his words are as dangerous to you as a Herald bullet, but Loveday is dead, and you cannot stop yourself from falling for him. You only wanted this. You called 16 of your children to die. What does it matter if 2 of them die a heartbeat early? We need the resurrection beasts. They're getting closer. You know this. Gideon has been warning us for years, and we can't run forever. We need more lictors. His hands are wrapped around your thighs, and without realizing it, you have reached down to drape your arms around his shoulders. The fabric of his simple black shirt is soft against your palms, and your thumbs are resting on the back of his neck. Skin to skin, you see him. His heart is beating fast and hard against his sternum. You can feel the soft pillows of lungs inflating and deflating within his thoracic cage. You can feel the currents of his nervous system. Distantly, you know it's an act. You know that God's physiologic responses are no less malleable than your own. But you want to believe. More lictors, you repeat. 10,000 years, and you still see her whenever you close your eyes. Loveday was so brave in the end, braver than you were. She kissed your forehead. She helped you hold the blade. Her hands were so steady and did not waver. Your hands, however, could not stop shaking as you wove the theorem, her life's blood draining out onto the floor. You remember that first burst within you. You remember how your bones burned, the marrow springing to life with a fervor it never knew before. You remember the way the tumors bloomed in your lungs with the sudden injection of thallergy, and you died 3 times on that bloodied floor before your newly remade body could even begin to learn how to balance. Loveday's dead arms were around you. And John Gaius wants more. You want to wring his neck, but you feel frozen. "Please," John says. He looks up, then over at the perfect preserved corpse of the Seventh House sign. His hands are gripping your arms, bruises spreading out under his fingertips, and you know he can see you too. "Whatever you were trying to do here, I'm not angry. I could never be. I know you. I know you didn't want her to have to live like you. I know you're hurting. You've been hurting. God, I'm sorry. I've tried. I can try again. I should have tried harder. You shouldn't have to suffer." You spent your whole life running from the river, and nothing as pedestrian as pain, even an eternity of it, could ever have deterred you. Loveday understood, and she gave her life to you in the most beautiful, terrible way. John Gaius does not understand, and dimly, you know that's the point. He's trapping you. He saw your betrayal, and now he kneels before you like a penitent, unwinding your murderous resolve and turning it into something he can control. You can feel him breathe against you, great gulping sobs that try to break you. You want to kill him. You have wanted to kill him for thousands of years. But now, something like love stays your hand. "You don't know me," you say instead. "It's all you have left." "Help me understand," John pleads, and you press your thumbs into the meat of his neck. He leans into the touch. His skin bends under your nails, but does not break. "You've been in pain. Please, Kithareya, if you have ever loved me, help me understand." You realize, very suddenly, what he is saying, what he is offering to you. Your fingernails press deeper, and for the first time in 10,000 years, his skin splits. God bleeds. You take a breath. "You want to know how it feels?" "Please," he whispers back. "Kithareya, please, I'm so sorry." You do not say, "If you truly want to understand, watch me burn your houses and live for 10,000 years knowing you did not stop." You do not say, "If you were truly sorry, you would never have kneeled at my feet and cried." With nothing but his words, God has broken you, and the only thing you can think of is the pit of regret that has grown within you, and how it has begun to poison the part of you who could never, would never, regret the gift that Loveday has given you. You want to show him how it hurts. You need to, and this is not the revenge you were hoping for. This is not the revenge that Loveday deserves. But you have so rarely gotten what you have hoped for, and Loveday never got what she deserved. You sharpen your nails to a razor point and rip his lungs from his chest. The back of his ribcage cracks open under your hands, his shirt shredding and scattered in pieces onto the floor. His mouth is open in a wordless scream as you pull the sacks of tissue out, spread them like wings over his spine. You don't let him die. Not that he can. Not with the tomb still locked tight. Not with his iron grip around your heart. But you flush his system with oxygen anyway. You keep him awake. You keep his blood moving inside his body. You redirect capillaries, preserving the great pulmonary trunk even as it shines wetly in the light. It smokes, slightly, John's blood burning up where it touches the air, and you hope it hurts. "Does that hurt?" you coo, all too gently. He jerks his head in a nod as you brush one hand along the side of his face, as you use the other to grow tumors in his spine, his lungs, his liver, and kidneys. It's exhilarating. His bones crack under the pressure, the careful networks of periosteum brutalized with blunt force by the invader you have set loose in his body. He groans, and you whisper, "Good boy." Your body, too, is not spared from this assault. The rush of the energetic and thalogetic output had sent your own tumors into an excited frenzy, and you spit blood as Loveday heals you, again and again and again. "Or would you rather I say thank you, my lord?" You bat your eyelashes. "Would you rather I drop to my knees at your feet, kiss your knuckles and say, 'Oh lord, thank you for saving me, for finding me dying on your planet of cultists and offering me the chance at immortality. John's eyes are so wide as he shakes his head quickly. Too bad. Loveday saved me. You, your voice is cold. All you did was teach me how to die.
What can I do for your forgiveness?
John wheezes out. He's repaired his own trachea enough to speak. He's overridden your necromancy, picked apart and rewoven your theorem without even a wince of effort. Something deep inside you laughs. Were you really planning to kill him? Did you ever truly believe you could? Even with your hands on his lungs, his body filled with your tumors, he is the one in control.
Suffer,
you hiss, and you rip his lungs free. The blood sprays, and you taste a tang of citrus on his tongue before it burns away. His lungs hit the floor with a wet sound, already crumbling, and in the ruin of his back you can see new buds unfurling from the naked end of his bronchi. You don't prevent the new lungs from forming, but you do inject them with tumors as they grow and fill the spaces around his heart. You accelerate the growth. You push the cancer into every cell. The effort hurts you, and you vomit up some terrible combination of parenchyma and tumor, but you do not stop. He reaches out to grip your arm, and great bruises bloom under his hand as the cells in your own marrow dwindle to nothing, only for the blood under your skin to vanish as your body yet again refuses to die. You jerk away from him, and he falls to the floor. He reaches out to you, and you let him clutch your leg. You let him touch. The touch is good. You want to see inside him as his body is ravaged by 10,000 years of your rage. You watch as he convulses, watch as the divine engine within him purges the cancer from every cell. You watch as he stills, coughs, rights himself. When he finally pulls his hand away, it is a relief.
Well,
he says, wiping his hands on his trousers. He pushes himself off the floor and shrugs off the last tattered scraps of his shirt, and his back is whole and new and unscarred.
Did you get it out of your system?
Yes, you hear yourself say, and the Lord your God pulls you into an embrace. The end.